Thank you, Jim. Next, we're hearing from Brad Malin. He's the assistant professor at the Department of Biomedical Informatics, Vanderbilt University. Brad?
Hi. So I think this talk's going to be a little different than some things that we've been focusing on so far, but it's an interesting talk because it's an interesting topic. But I just wanted to say, like, the way I think about this is that it's a trustworthiness issue, but it's actually something that you have to do more than with respect to trust. It's not just about the individuals. It's not just about the systems. It's about combinations of the two. So in preparation for this talk, we were asked several different questions in which we might be able to provide some advice. And so I'm going to try and guide this talk along these three questions. So if we look at the first one, it has to do with what principles should we be using to guide these security decisions, and how might these apply to voter registration databases? So is the problem really any different than anything else that we've been encountering with respect to security in the rest of the world? And so one of the first things I just wanted to highlight was that the problems are really very much dependent on who we're talking about. And so there's different security issues associated with the different uses of this data. And so there's actually multiple environments that we need to take into consideration. It's not just a single environment. The first one is that data is being used both behind closed doors, which is the private access model, but also within the public. And that would be the public access model. So in private access, we're talking about the use of information for determining whether or not an individual is who they say they are, trying to determine if they're trying to book the system or use fraud. And the political process ends up in the public realm. So should we be able to market to people, or should we be able to determine if an individual is part of a particular party and they might want to receive any type of information with respect to that party? So with respect to this public information sharing issue, let me just give you an example. In the state of Washington, this is the type of information that's made public, right? And I'm sure many of you have seen this. But let me just highlight the fact. So it's an individual's name, it's where they live, it's their political jurisdiction. So this would usually constitute the zip codes of where they live. And then a lot of other additional information. But I also want to highlight the fact that, you know, the voter record, this is something that is also considered to be part of the voter registration information. It's not just the representation of this individual's demographic, but it's also what they've done over time. However, I just wanted to highlight the fact that this is not in violation of any particular law. This is something that's mandated that needs to be given out. But behind closed doors, there's another story. And so I was looking at this committee's credo, or what they've been trying to figure out how to do. And one of those things is that they're trying to recommend how to evolve and maintain the current system, right? But do it with respect to sharing information that is both secure and accurate. And so let me concentrate on accuracy for a second. So in Pennsylvania, they're putting together a statewide database, or what they're calling the statewide uniform registry of electors, and they're using identifying information that is in the public realm, but also things that are behind the public realm, such as Social Security information or the Department of Motor Vehicle information, and figuring out how to do matches with personal identifiers that may be considered to be a little sensitive. And so when we start talking about how this information is going to be shared or used, I just want to highlight the fact that this is true in about any community in which you work, that people are inherently curious, and that if you put the data in front of them, they are going to touch it. They are going to play around with it. They are going to use it in ways that you never expected them to do it. So you have to be wary of the people who are outside of your organization, but you have to be even more wary of the people that are inside your organization. So some of the easier goals I say we should be taking into account, and you've heard this time and time again today, is you have to authenticate people. You have to have some type of an access control. You may not want people to have access to the same types of information. You have to have logs, and you have to have audits. Encryption is big. And at the same time, you want to minimize how information leaves the organization. So I come at you from a medical community where one of the biggest problems that we run into, and it's a similar problem, is that this data ends up on laptops, and it ends up on PDAs, and it ends up on cell phones, and it leaves the organization. And if you're not supposed to have it outside, and it's not encrypted, this is potentially a violation. There are even harder challenges. And so some of these are that you can audit, but what are you auditing for? So you have to understand the use cases of this information. If you don't understand what people are supposed to be doing when they're making changes or what it means when they make a change, then you're stuck with saying, I've got all this information. I've got terabytes of audit logs, but I have no idea how to make any sense of them. You also have to understand the workflow. So where does this information go from place to place? That will help you define your use cases. You have to define the roles of these people. We understand what people's titles are within an organization, but we don't know what their roles are. Standards is huge. If you don't have standards, you have no ability to standardize your or do consistent audits across organizations or across states. Let me just try to jump through this. There's another issue that you need to take into account when we're talking about behind closed doors, and that is the data sharing going to be centralized or is it distributed? Is it leaving your organization and going to some place that you don't have any control over, or do you let people just query your databases? At the same time, you have to be concerned with what type of information is leaving your organization. Is it the public information? It's okay if you're sharing names and dates of birth, maybe. It probably is not okay if you're sharing private information that people did not expect you to share, such as social security numbers. So if we have this type of an environment where there's a central repository, who plays this role of the trusted third party? Who is going to be doing these types of data linkages and accuracy measures for these types of, for the states? As in contrast, this would be a distributed model. I'm not going to go into the details of what the technologies would be, but there are different types of security and privacy concerns associated with these. So as I mentioned, you have to be concerned with what type of data is being shared, what is allowed to be compared across state lines. This is something that needs to be planned out. If you think about this more than just in the next year, if you're thinking about this down into the future, a lot of computer science research has shown that if you wanted to keep this data in an encrypted form and you wanted to do matching of information in an encrypted way, there are ways to do this. Some of it is very much mired in the research community, but it is slowly making its way into standardized terms. So I don't want to run out of time, so let me skip forward a little bit. It's always easier to do it this way. I'm going forward. There we go. Great. All right. So the second question had to do with what privacy considerations need to be taken into account, especially with the impact of combining and linking data. Now, this is where I tend to spend most of my time in my research. I'm not a security information architect by profession. I'm more concerned with the use of personally identifiable information. And so again, when we're talking about person-specific information, we have to be very much, you have to represent the type of realm in which this information is being used. And so these are, let me just give you an example. There are different types of threats that exist. So you can have privacy violations by inference. That if you look at the data and you say it looks okay, it could be that you can infer something that was not meant to be disclosed. And then there are privacy violations by linkage. And I realize that this is going to be the topic of another workshop, but I just wanted to highlight this fact that voter registration lists are susceptible to linkage to other types of sensitive information. And so you have to be aware of what that information is. There's also different types of attacks that people can issue, and we need to be able to model what these are. So the first would be an untargeted identification, where you don't care who it is that you identify, you just want to discredit this type of a system and subvert any type of actions that have been taken. And then the alternative of that is the targeted identification, where somebody has information on a specific individual, whether it's a VIP, a government official, whether it's somebody that's very much public realm, in the public space, and they want to identify that person. So the ability to achieve these types of attacks are dependent on the economics of data access. And I just wanted to give you some stats on this. So if we went back to the state of Washington, if I wanted to have access to the voter registration information, it's going to cost me about $30 to have access to all this information. In Tennessee, we don't have a centralized database currently, but we're building one under the HAVA Act. And so this is a particular county, and as you can see, it's going to cost me almost about the same amount as it would have cost me in the state of Washington just to have access to a single county's information. In the state of Georgia, it costs about $500 to have access to this information. So just notice that there's different costs of entry into getting this information. But I wanted to highlight Georgia for a second because if you went down here, this is the voter history files. So with voter history files, you can query voter history files, and so if you do an aggregation query against voter history files, so you get some interesting things. So for instance, you can query based on county and the date of an election, and you end up coming up with small statistics. Now, why is this a concern? Well, what we've just learned here is that in Catoosa County, on this date, there was only one individual that voted. Now, why is this a concern? Well, a lot of counties end up reporting what the results were of a particular election in the end. So this is actually a violation of this individual's privacy, in that we actually will end up learning who they actually voted for. And so that's a concern. That's not just about voter registration lists. This is voter registration history. So this was data that I just took pretty recently. So you can see that the problem persists. So let me just give you a simple principle to take home with this one, which is that disclosure control methods are available, and you have people on your committee who have experience in this area. And so there are ways that you can suppress these types of small sample statistics, and I would strongly recommend doing so in order to prevent being in violation of various legal controls. And I think I have 1 minute left, maybe. This was highlighted before, but I just wanted to make it home, hammer it home, which is that with voter registration information, there's other types of data sets that exist. And so you potentially put other types of data in harm. Now, in this example, what we see is that this was a study done in the 1990s by Holly Sweeney, which was that she took voter registration lists in the state of Massachusetts, hospital discharge data from the same state, crossed it on demographics of the individuals. One of the things that she saw was that 87% of the people in that area and in the country in general were identifiable on these features. And it's not just this problem, so it actually, we've hinged on this type of result, and we've been able to re-identify other types of data sets like DNA data, but you have to be careful of what any other type of data set that exists in the world. So I'll let you take this one home. What type of adversarial test would I do? I'd say that I'm a biologist by training, sometimes, and that there's a central dogma of biology. I'm going to say that there's a central dogma of re-identification, and that you have to just use this very simple model, which is that there's identified information in the form of voter data, there's de-identified data all across the place that gets disclosed in the public realm, and we have to figure out what the relationships are between these two types of information. I'm just about out of time, I believe. So let me just close on this. So with policy and how does technology relate to policy, there are boundaries in terms of how you get access to this data and what you're allowed to do with it. So for instance, in the state of Washington, the policy specification is that you're allowed to use this information for anything except advertisements, basically. There's nothing that prevents you from doing anything else. So if you were to use voter registration lists with a re-identification of somebody from a different type of database, this is not prohibited by law. And so I just want to bring that to people's attention, that it's very possible that the legal controls on the use and collection of this information are not quite up to date or quite where they should be. So I think I'm just going to conclude here, which is that it's a combination of technology and policy, but don't forget the economic deterrents. If you raise the bar, if you make it more difficult for people to get access to this information, then you might be able to prevent people from just randomly snooping on this data. I strongly believe that the current regulatory model is insufficient for protecting this information from being used in ways that it was not intended to be. As the example I just gave, it has protection from marketing, but nothing much else. And so I'll stop there.